We're all good.
Sorry about that. We had yet another round of technical difficulties.
No worries. I had to pull off the road, and I'm kind of in a noisy spot, so I'm going to keep my phone on mute unless I'm weighing in on something.
Sounds good. Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
Okay, so we had just gone over the meeting materials. So the first piece summarized the discussion we had last meeting, and the other attachment was the city bylaw template, with most of the changes being additions from code or decisions that had been made with the mayor's office so far regarding the setup of the commission. So our thought was to spend the meeting going over the summary document and adding additional details or anything that's missing to kind of keep building that out with the intent of having a fully fleshed out content document that we can then merge with the bylaws to make it one cohesive document.
Sounds good.
Okay. So does anyone have thoughts or preferences on where they'd want to start with the summary document?
I just want to say thanks for organizing it in this way. I think that good grouping of the of the items.
Yeah, I have no preference to start. The meeting agendas, are we talking about the monthly RIC meetings agendas?
Mm-hmm.
So that's more about picking
what we're actually
talking
the meetings
about.
Are on.
Yeah, and I think the intent was to try to be as proactive as possible.
Yeah, because essentially we have a work plan right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and try to be intentional about when something does show up, being able to say doesn't fit with our agenda.
And that flies into kind of the introducing topic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we talk about introducing topics first, and then we can talk about the actual topics.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. So at last meeting, people were kind of listing out where different topics could come from, but I thought it would help as an exercise, even if it doesn't go in the bylaws, to kind of think through where you all think topics should be coming from.
Like from the community standpoint, stakeholder standpoint, organizational
at all.
Standpoint?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The way my mind thinks is not who's bringing the topic to the table, but where does that topic get brought to?
Okay.
And then evaluated, like maybe it comes to the Rules and Bylaws Committee to then decide, does it fit the purpose of the RSC? And then from there it goes to the RSC to then decide on an agenda.
Yeah, so I actually caught a typo. The last bullet point in introducing topics, I think that was to assess topic ideas, so that goes to what you're saying, Mike,
okay.
Of like having a process and then a something we're evaluating topics on so that there's a format or a way it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think a way to vet topics, in a way, it's a way to vet topics so that the whole committee commission isn't dealing with that. Sort of related to that is... And maybe this is too granular right now, but in that last bullet, process criteria for assessing topics, I would say, how do they tie back to the purpose of the commission as identified in the bylaws?
And the ordinance.
Because one of the things that I keep just tripping over in my own mind is the Office of Rental Services, the Rental Services Office, and it seems that there's an assumption that we have some oversight role there or some directive role or input, and I just need real strong clarification on that, because I think that if we don't clarify that, we just get sucked into another rat hole. And I don't really care either way. It's more, are we all clear that we're either one way or another? And so I think that as part of that process for identifying topics, could we vet them against the purpose of the
The bylaws for the rule and bylaw committee states how we weigh a topic as far as, so we kind of already have that in those bylaws. Kind of going to your point, even just from a community information standpoint of what the RSC commission is for, you know, when the screening criteria is first put on the calendar October of last year, you know, RHA sent out a memo to everyone saying, this is what the RSC is creating, and these are the members, you need to know who they are. And so I push back, I'm like, we didn't create any of this. Like, don't send that to your group of people saying that these 13 individuals are creating this. You need to understand. So even just having that, so the community understands what the role is, and then the role of the RSC, and then the role of the office, and they are two completely different things.
So at the last meeting, people talked about how topics could come from the mayor or council, from the Housing Bureau, and from the Rental Services Commission itself. Does that cover
Andres?
Base? Yes.
Andres? One clarification. So if somebody comes with an idea, and the, you know, we have our process, does staff need to check in with the mayor about whether that's something he wants us to be looking at?
I think that there will be a number of topics that come up through the bylaw process where we will then need to go back and check with Housing Bureau leadership and with the mayor's office to see how the different conversations we're having lines up with their vision for the commission. So we will be reconciling that, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Could I push back a little bit on that? I think we'd want to know where topics that come up for discussion land relative to other communications that are coming up. But regardless of the fact that this is a commission that was, you know, formed by the mayor, it stands independently, and it's got, you know, the bylaws to guide it. So I think there's actually an opportunity for, and that's really what I'm sort of hoping for and advocating for, is for this commission to, you know, to push back a little bit on needing to get sort of approval and to more design its own work plan and to say, yeah, and so that when things come up, I think it's would be wise, sort of to Dipper's point, wise to say to PHB staff, okay, we've heard these topics being suggested, we'd like to discuss these, and staff might say, well, you know, PHAC's talking about this, or so-and-so's talking about this, or this is on the mayor's agenda. Oh, okay. And that might size how we do it, as opposed to sort of getting input directly from PHB leadership on whether or not it's something we should pursue. That, to me, feels more like what a commission's sort of responsibility is to act that way. So,
and I agree. Like, if you think of our form of governmentship, if everything has to go through the mayor, we're more dictatorship rather than republic or democracy. And I fully agree with that on that standpoint.
So I think there's just some opportunity there, and that doesn't mean being reckless about you know, looking at topics independent of what's going on outside us.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I think it's the balance of being proactive,
right,
to bring issues, agenda items that we all feel are important, want to discuss, and then being able to be responsive to what may be coming down the pipeline from elected officials, so we can do both, right? And I think this process is how are we balancing those kind of two competing needs.
And I think that's helpful to codify it, because it's functionally what we've been trying to do, where I've been very intentional about never coming and saying, this is the change we're making, it's been decided, but rather, like, here's a suggestion from staff, here's the reasons we arrived at this decision, if the commission wants to head in a different direction, that's something that it can choose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you're right about codifying it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think members of the commission may have a slightly different feeling after the whole rental registration stuff kind of went out the window this year. I think people may be a little bit more like, we'll be more proactive this maybe this next few.
Well, and that's I mean, that and other things are part of why I think there's an opportunity to really grab things more directly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To this list of mayor, council, PHB staff, I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't identify the public as as sources of agenda. I mean, I think we should, because one of our directives is community involvement, I think we should definitely have an avenue.
And I didn't know, I'm sorry, if that was being left off because the thought was that we would hear from public input and then somebody, one of the commissioners would say, yes, I want to propose that issue we just heard about.
That's what I was going to say, is we don't want to get inundated with just the community coming at us. So if there's a process for the community to go through, which is either public testimony or reaching out to an RSC member or commissioner itself to then propose it to the group. So that way there's kind of a wall from the public, at least a filter that it goes through.
I think that would be helpful functionally, especially if you're having a set process where, like, every time an idea comes up, you do all these things to have it be something that the commission had some sort of guide on.
And I think it's misleading, right, to the public to say, you can bring any idea, we will consider, you know, consider it. I think it has to be something that is championed by somebody at the table.
Here's your way, here's the process, you're going to use to bring it.
So that gives a commissioner at the table, when hearing public testimony, to then propose that this becomes a topic for consideration.
The second bullet point on establishing timelines is a little bit trickier. I think it's going to be something difficult to pin down in general. I think it's important to try it, but at this point I don't have suggestions on a written process on how we establish timelines, because it seems like it's kind of going to be case by case in almost every situation.
And I think maybe taking it up a few thousand feet would be to say, at least state it, that we're not specifically and only tied to the city council's agenda. And I think that's in part where this came from. Oh, look, this ordinance is going to city council. You guys need to deal with it now. I think that what we want to do is be really clear that, okay, that is in the case of that one ordinance, but not every single thing we do is about the city council's timeline. Again, not ignoring the fact that they do have a timeline, that there is a timeline, that there's a budget timeline, that those things are out there. But we can have our own timeline as well. So I think that's, at least that's how I would say, but your point is well taken, that there's going to need to be flexibility.
But I think even speaking to who sets the timeline is important.
And in this scenario, identify how timelines establish. Is this a timeline for once something gets proposed to be considered, how long it takes to then get in the queue for being on the work plan?
I think it was both. Okay. Both what is the window of the length of a process of vetting a topic, and also how do you decide how many times, for how long, something ends up being.
And I think you're right, too, that it's going to be a little bit case by case.
But leaving it high level so that that can happen.
This is Deborah. Is there a way to would it make sense to have, as each thing, you know, as things come up, have perhaps the bylaws committee and then the executive committee establish a timeline for that topic as the topic comes up? So what we would have is the process would be a vetting process, you know, for that timeline. Is that a way of getting something codified without having to say exact timelines for every topic.
Yeah, I think writing something like that would work.
Or maybe a hybrid that's sort of like, well, you know, we're not going to be beholden to any one timeline like city council decision making. Rather, we'll be proactive and create timelines that are specific to each project, but maybe be more specific about saying, knowing that the budget is coming up in 6 months, and we are looking at an item that will that should go into the budget. We should be done no later than. So, sort of a little bit of both.
Yeah, and I think like what happened last year is we really need the RSC needs to be cognizant of City Council, and City Council needs to be cognizant of RSC, and we need to kind of adjust our timelines accordingly. Like when we like what we did last year, we modified our timeline for the schedule that Commissioner Udaly was on. But at the same time, we need to allow the commissioners need to understand our process and allow us the time to complete that process.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds good. At the last meeting, the group kind of reached consensus on the idea of having regular listening sessions, which is going to be a later conversation. But then having some sort of, perhaps after the listening session, a chance for the RSC to brain dump topic ideas and then have them vet and have that happen at a regular interval. So I know in that conversation, people were thinking of having two listening sessions a year, and then that would be followed each one by an opportunity for the RSC to push a series of topic ideas. And I wanted to check back to see how people felt about it, if they still like that, if there are modifications they want to make to that.
I still like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just gives two times a year where community has an additional time for public testimony to get an item on the agenda. And I'm great with that.
Yeah, I like it.
Andres, I like the idea too. Is there, how would the Bureau handle that? I mean, would there be a facilitator there? Would there somebody who is, you know, has expertise in sort of, you know, running a session like that?
That's something we can talk about. The Bureau has used facilitators with advisory bodies in the past, so it's a possibility. It really depends on what the Commission's interest is out of that listening session. So is it a people just come speak for 3 minutes? Is it a facilitated conversation? Like what level of structure is desired? And then checking back in with our capacity as a Bureau, our budget, and seeing what we can do.
Can't remember what we did. What did we do the first time? Was it just a sign-up list? Okay, and then one of the chairs then just
called people and kept time.
So. Yeah, and I think it could also be, if we know what sort of what resources are available for facilitators, if we wanted one, if a listening session came up on a calendar and the topic of the day was something very specific, it might be wise to say, well, facilitated conversation might be better for this than just sort of open mic input. You know, so having, again, that sort of flexibility to be able to say, oh, what's going on right now in the world, in this community.
And that's where I like the idea of, like, the last time we, I can't remember what we limited public testimony to, but we limited it really to two topics, I thought. I think that does a disservice to the community. Like, I would rather see what's really on your mind, not what we want you to talk about. So I would rather not have a specific topic that they have to stick to.
Well, no, I was saying, but if there was one, that's when you bring in a facilitated conversation. That's when the conversation is good. So if there ever was the opportunity to have, where there's one topic, I mean, screening criteria is a really great example of that, to have a facilitated conversation because people are focused on that topic.
Yeah.
I think for most listening sessions, I would agree with you. I would want that to be just sort of a, what's on your mind? What do you feel like you're not, the people aren't hearing you say?
doesn't our bylaws say like a minimum number of listening sessions per year?
I don't remember. Okay. Kind of the format we've been going through now is to start from scratch. Okay. And so if there are concepts we want to pull from the old bylaws, we can, but we're not. I think the assumption of this committee was that they'd be rewriting it entirely.
Okay. That was sort of, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. What if we did something like a minimum of 2 listening sessions per year, 2 open listening sessions per year, and then that gives us the ability to choose if we want to have a facilitated topic for a third or subsequent meetings or listening sessions?
My concept of listening sessions too is like open. Anyone can come and tell us where there's gaps, that things are lacking, right, and what they need, additional protections or changes in the current law. So I like the idea of just open ones. I'm trying to think when a facilitated discussion would happen in like this setting. I don't know. I guess we could just say a minimum of 2 listening sessions, and not say what kind they are, and then that way we.
And the commission always has the ability to request additional meetings. So what comes to mind is we, as a bureau, are ramping up how often we do administrative rules, and we have a minimum requirement of how that's done, and it's a really simple process of put out a draft document, have a 90-day window is usually what we do, take public comment, have 1 or 2 public meetings, put out a finished draft, and say that's our rules, we took comment. And there's a lot of flexibility there to change what that looks like. We're going to do our permanent rules for relocation assistance coming up soon. If FAIR passes, we'd be doing rules for screening and or security deposits. If we're developing rental registration, there's the opportunity to have input on that. So I think there are like topics that could come up where we might want a facilitated conversation. And I think that if that was an interest the commission had, that could be a request made.
So could we say minimum of 2 listening sessions a year, and then just be silent on any type of facilitated conversation, and just if we need to mm-hmm. be creative. And also, I think it'd be really good to define listening session
mm-hmm.
so that we're all on the same. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the 3 of us, 4 of us. I'm assuming, Deborah, that you're on the same page with us about what a listening session
is. Yes, I am.
Yeah, I think that is nice to make sure that we, mm-hmm. that the whole commission understands. Here's what a listening session is. This is what we mean by that.
For sure.
Did people want to keep talking about listening sessions? So some of the things, and again, these are conversation topics, and some of these things might not end up being put in the bylaws if we feel like it's too prescriptive, but thinking through like the format, is the desired format just people come to a mic, they speak into the mic, they have a set amount of time, they go back, sit down, and we just kind of hear people until they're done?
Mm-hmm. I think that format works easiest for them. Facilitation without a facilitator.
I will say, just because of what I saw, I watched the last couple hours of the city council hearing last night, and I think that there are times when it can be frustrating if you're giving public testimony, and there's a piece of information that would be helpful to have in the moment or after you're done speaking, or correction on a definition or something, to have that flexibility within our listening sessions mm-hmm. to make sure that it's not necessarily getting into a conversation, because you don't want to go down that road, but to make sure that there's an opportunity for a commissioner or a PHB staff even to clarify something.
Mm-hmm. And then are you talking about like extending their speaking time?
Yeah, you know, so you give everybody 3 minutes, but mm-hmm. it's not quite as restricted as it mm-hmm. is at council.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody says, well, you know, I mean, like this came up last night about the rental registration system, and the mayor responded, well, no, actually that was funded, and that's
And cut into their time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think that, having that kind of flexibility to have a little bit of back and forth with participants.
And that's where I like to have clarified. And, like, there's been times we've had public testimony, and I'd like to engage. Mm-hmm. Don't know if it's appropriate. Don't know
right,
if we can.
Right.
And then what does that do for their time standpoint?
Exactly.
But if we're going to be using this as public testimony as a way to get a proposed topic on to review to be on the agenda, if we want to engage with someone to flesh that out more, to then, you know, like, hey, I may want to propose that. Let me engage with you so we could, at the end, then propose that.
Right.
So I'd like to have it in the, I don't know, if does that need to be in the bylaws that there can be?
Right, and what's the practical application of that?
Yeah.
So that it doesn't also seem unfair, so that you,
exactly.
You spend 10 minutes talking with one person
right.
And the next person, you're like, your time's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how does that,
I mean, that's up to all of you. So I think for listening sessions, it might make sense because there's been so much conversation for this and public testimony in general to create something that will go in the bylaws and then create just a separate standalone document that's like the RSC's process or procedures on mm-hmm. public testimony and listening sessions. And that could be a little bit more detailed and it won't be bylaws, but it will be guidance.
That's great.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Are listening sessions subject to the same rules as public testimony?
In what sense?
Well, so are there legal guidelines around public testimony? So we're a public body.
Mm-hmm.
Is public testimony, I mean, I just don't know the answer to this, but is everybody who signs up for public testimony supposed to get an equal amount of time?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay.
When they speak during meetings, it's part of the public record, but to my knowledge, that's the extent to which the public meetings law speaks to.
Okay, so there's lots of flexibility mm-hmm. there.
So we could say guidelines. Public testimony is 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. If a commissioner want to engage in a question and answer with a public testifier, that can extend their timeline by 2 minutes. Or
mm-hmm. or the timeline may be extended.
That's,
something like that.
You could also ask that folks get through their testimony and ask the commissioners to hold their questions till mm-hmm. the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they get through mm-hmm. the 3 minutes, and then that, those
right.
questions
so that
are part
be,
of their testimony.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just like additional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so essentially we're taking notes for question and answer after the testimony.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
And one thing I've been thinking about is, you know, I'm sure there'll be, especially if listening sessions are in the evenings, there will be times where not every commissioner will be able to attend, and how are either what is the burden on them to review the listening session, or is there a way that they're going to get the information of what was discussed at the listening session? Maybe the onus is on them to you know, if there's a recording that they listen to it, or is there a summary that's provided to them?
And is there a minimum number, would there be a minimum number of commissioners that should attend in order to make it official? Are there quorum regulations for a listening?
You need
session?
A quorum to make decisions.
But
so if there is no quorum, nothing happens.
But we could still have the listening session.
Yes.
Right.
But there's no.
Yeah, I mean, listening session to me doesn't mean a decision session.
Right.
It means a listening session.
No, but I think it sends a message.
Yeah.
If half the commissioners show up.
Okay.
It sends a message.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think while we might not be able to prescribe it,
mm-hmm.
Getting all of the commissioners, as many as can attend, to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like your idea of saying, and if you can't be there, here's the recording. Please
mm-hmm.
make every effort to listen to
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
I think
that public perception.
Yeah,
we
sure.
want to hear from you, but
but we're not going to show up. And
we
want to
hear
yeah.
from you, but Game of Thrones season 8 is on. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Good. That sounds good. Did people have thoughts on public testimony at meetings? So this is now the monthly RSC meetings, not the listening session.
So why do we... why do we do it
mm-hmm.
in between Mm-hmm. Why don't we do it right up front?
Mm-hmm. So
that's my only. I mean, I think we should have it at every meeting,
mm-hmm.
but the order in which it comes is odd.
It's like most things about the RSC, a practice that just came out of. It happened, and the executive committee's preference was, I believe, PHAC, the Housing Advisory Committee, does testimony at the beginning of meetings, and the concern with that format was it didn't give the public a chance to hear the content and to comment on the content, so they wanted to set it up in a way where people would have the opportunity to kind of hear a little bit about this meeting's going to be about this, here's the high level, and so if they want to comment on what's being discussed, they have an opportunity to do so. And I think there was an aversion to putting it at the end. I think the main reason was cutting into it.
Yeah, do you want me to?
Yeah.
So we did it at the end in the beginning, right? And I think people were feeling like they wanted the input of the public testimony when we had structured the meetings around like the information presentation and the discussion, and they wanted the public testimony input to help in advance or to be part of inform the discussions.
Yeah, I don't particularly like it at the end. It feels like it breaks up the momentum of our conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's definitely something that you all can make a decision on. That was just how we ended up where we are now. Do people have thoughts, suggestions?
As much as it interrupts the meeting, I think it makes sense where it is.
Okay.
But then again, oftentimes the public testimony is not directly related to the conversation,
I think the reason for not having it at the end is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of six and a half dozen of the other at the beginning versus in between, so whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as long as it's there and not, I think having it at the end also makes it feel like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end of the meeting.
And now
we
go
can
home.
Talk now. We don't really care. So.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think,
And then are people thinking the same kind of format of generally 3 minutes can extend for questions from commissioners at the end of their testimony?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Andres, I just wanted to weigh in on that, and I know you said at the end of their testimony, I wonder, you know, I think we need to be very clear about that and, you know, not have people like 10 minutes later commenting on what somebody said in their testimony, because it doesn't give them an opportunity to, you know, if their testimony was kind of rebutted, it doesn't give them an opportunity to address that comment. So I just think it's really important that it's written up in a way that, you know, ensures that that's the only time you have the commissioner has the opportunity to address those comments.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
I know a question that came up as well. With the listening sessions, it's a little bit easier because if there's going to be a regular opportunity for the commission to add topics afterwards, that's a natural place for that to go. But as the commission receives testimony week by week, which frequently doesn't relate to the agenda, what should the commission do with that?
With that testimony?
Mm-hmm.
That input?
Mm-hmm.
I think it sort of goes to what Mike said earlier about the listening session. You know, if a commissioner hears something from public testimony and thinks, oh, yeah, I really want to bring this up, then it's sort of incumbent on that commissioner to elevate that topic to a centered discussion item.
Yeah, so if public testimony is resonating with the commissioner, right, then at the end of the meeting, the commissioner then can say, based on this testimony, I'd like to propose that we put this on in the queue to be processed as a potential agenda item, future agenda item.
Mm-hmm. And can we do that at any meeting, or is the thought that we're going to do that kind of at every 6-month mark, kind of take all the ideas together and put that on paper?
I think it would make most sense to do it at each meeting so people don't have to try to hold on to it.
And then we'd have a documented running list, which would be a good record.
Mm-hmm. And then monthly, as the bylaws committee's meeting, they're vetting it to make sure it meets the purpose, and then it goes into a big agenda queue, and then every 6 months, then the RSC is organizing that agenda queue. That's what I picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good.
And then another question that's come up, and I think this is going to be particularly with, there could be testimony that comes up that doesn't easily lead to an agenda item. So some of the testimony we've received is about people's specific housing situations or what's happening to them in a given moment, which could be a opportunity for an RSC commissioner to say, I think this is an important topic, we need to discuss how we address this in a larger way. But what to do kind of with things that don't neatly rise into, we should talk about this topic as like a systemic issue.
I guess it would depend on whether or not, well, my thought on this is, first of all, making clear that the public testimony that's presented at RSC is not done so with an expectation that the commission is going to be reactive. We're not a complaint department, for lack of a better term, and I'm not trying to say the complaints. But you know, we're not there to take action on every item that somebody brings up. But I think it never hurts to just keep clarifying that.
Yeah.
That this is your opportunity to get this on record. Mm-hmm. And when it gets on record, you know, I might review the minutes 4 months later and say, oh, wow, yeah, this is really important. I'm going to go back to the RSC and put that topic in the queue. And that's my prerogative to, you know, to bring it up. But I think we want to make sure that there's no expectation that the commission has to do anything in the moment on that day within that session. At the same time, the other thought I had was, how do we direct people to appropriate resources and make sure that there is either resource information at the meeting, you know, that somebody can get, like, if you have a problem, here are some places you can contact. Because I think that is part of what you want to do. This, perhaps?
Yeah. I gotta get one of those, by the way. Keep one with me.
Dang, I would have brought you one.
Yeah, I need one, so.
Yeah.
That'd be great, because I bring my backpack everywhere. I won't throw that in there.
Yeah,
I think it's a good idea. Something I've noticed, I think it's the Bond Oversight Committee. We have Bishop Holt facilitate, and he has kind of like a, we're now doing public testimony. This is what public testimony is. This is what public testimony isn't. This is how much time you'll have. So like kind of a like spiel. And I think we could definitely put that together for the RSC.
I think something like that, I think it just helps to be reminded for all of us about what it is, what it isn't.
Yeah.
Well, it also very important at the listening sessions, too.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, I think that's...
That's probably where it's most needed.
Yeah.
Okay. Do people have any other thoughts on public testimony and input?
right now. We will come back to these. This isn't the end.
One other thought is, it seems like there's people who come into the RSC meeting often confuse where they sign up for public testimony mm-hmm. with where the materials are for the meeting. So maybe we could just have a little better signage.
Mm-hmm.
Sign up for public testimony yeah. here.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay. We got through two of the four. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Great. With that, I think that's it, and we will see you all for the next RSC meeting.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Well done, team.